This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Aw, the ice cream machine is broken. Can you help me find somebody to fix it?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes you on a tour through the world of tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek like no other. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi, bringing you part two of our two-part series from the Carnival Valor. If you haven't heard part one, don't worry, it's not a requirement, but you might want to go back and listen. It's full of good stuff. You can find that at the website at www.chuckchat.com. In January 2009, my lovely wife and I took a Caribbean cruise aboard Carnival Cruise Line's Valor. Longtime listeners to my podcast will remember in early 2005 I did a few podcasts aboard the Carnival Miracle, so this time I set out with the purpose to bring you some really geeky information about what it takes to make a cruise line go. I was fortunate enough to sit down with safety officer and bridge crew member Salvatore Mongraviti, staff chief engineer Domenico Otrello, and IS manager Alex Tan to discuss the tech behind one of the most popular ways to vacation. Salvatore, can you give me an idea of what is the purpose of the bridge on board the Carnival Valor?
Yeah, well, Chuck, the bridge is, first of all, is always manned. There is always two officers, and they are in charge for the navigation.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, they always monitor what's happening on board the ship. For example, they keep an eye on the fire detection system, any alarms, and in case there is any alarm, they have fire patrols who are sent to check what's going on. And mainly is the, along with the control room, is the core of the ship. So all the communication, they reach the bridge, and we are in charge for the navigation, everything that is all around the Valor. We make sure that, you know, the ship start sail from A and reach safely B.
Now, I know there are a number of safety systems built in. You mentioned the fire alarm systems. There's also navigation systems that... could you give me an overview of navigation is probably one of the more technologically advanced systems on board the ship.
Yes. Nowadays, the navigation system is quite... we can say that is integrated with many instruments, like mm-hmm. for example the GPS, which constantly give us the ship position, and also that GPS integrated with the autopilot system make sure that the ships always sail into a track, and there's a small merging of movement
mm-hmm.
Of track side, which is meters, which is given by the GPS, and basically the autopilot is working in conjunction with the waypoint system that we are loaded into the to the NECOS, is the navigation and command system that keep they work against the wind and the current to make sure that we always stay on the track, and also on the economical side, they avoid that, you know, the ship drift too much away off the course, and we keep the track, and we keep that course. You know, basically, there's no need anymore of the quartermaster, of the person that was standing all the time on the wheel. And try to correcting the force of the wind and of the current to make sure that the ship was keeping that steering.
Is it the same GPS system that, say, we would use in my car?
Yes, exactly. Okay, the same system. You know, there are more than 24 satellites, and, you know, we have three GPS on the bridge.
For redundancy?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Redundancy, and they are all interfaced with the navigation bridge. They are also interfaced with the radio communication, and, you know, it's a really nice tool. But we don't have to forget that these are instruments that they can black out any time, any minute, and so we always try to have a double system, a backup system to find out the ship's position.
Well, I would imagine that you still have to have the traditional navigational skills of...
Yes, even though we use the electronic charts, which is integrated on the on the radar, we still plot the ship's position on the paper charts. When we are close to the land, we keep the ship's position looking at the landmarks. And sometimes we use the sextant, you know.
It's a beautiful instrument.
Yeah, it's a beautiful instrument, but, you know, the you have to make some practice, otherwise, you know, you lose all the, you know, the calculation. You forgot what you have studied at school, so it's a good practice sometimes to review it and make you think, you know, years ago when there was no GPS, you know, how they used to do it to sail, and these are still fascinating instruments to use.
They are. No, I presume you keep current, like, pilots on board an aircraft. Do you have regular training, or you know, do you have to attend courses to keep your knowledge
updated?
Yeah,
of course. Yeah. In fact, I know. Quite often there are courses that we need to attend, like, for example, radar, which is called ARPA, and ARPA-SAR, which is also for search and rescue operation, and yes, there are many trainings that, you know, once in a while we have to refresh, and that keep us updated too.
I notice every once in a while we're making a course correction. You typically, when a ship is passing nearby, is that done manually, or are there other sensors that are saying it's time to keep our distance?
It's done manually, of course. Yeah, because we have, depending on the traffic, the captain is in his standing orders tell us how safe he wants that we pass from another vessel. But sometimes, you know, it's not, we cannot really do it because, you know, the traffic is so intense that we have to reach an accomplishment, you know, because especially when we arrive into busy ports, of course, that one we do in manual steering. That is actually the quartermaster at the wheel, and he follows our orders. We monitor closely the situation, and we get in touch with the VHF, with the other ship, and we reach an agreement. But you know.
My compliments to the quartermaster on getting in and out of Belize. That was threading a needle.
Yes,
it's
yes.
A very complex series of turns.
It's quite a turn, yes.
That was unbelievable how long it took to get in and out of there. And I looked at the course, and it was like somebody dropped a spaghetti noodle on the map.
Yeah, that's true, that's true.
This is John Chatterton from Deep Sea Detectives. You're with Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
A ship would be nothing without its engines. I learned that it's not just two diesel engines connected to shafts to turn propellers. There's much more involved with today's major cruise ships, as Domenico explains.
Basically, let's start from the six diesel generators we have on board. Yeah.
But there's only two propellers. Why do we
two
need
propellers?
Six?
Because they are electrical propeller. So we have six diesel generators, and which are going to give power to these two big propulsion motors.
Okay.
Which are huge, are actually 26 megawatts each. So they're big engines.
So it's much like
a diesel locomotive, where there's a diesel engine that powers an electric motor that actually drives the vehicle.
The philosophy, more or less, is the same.
Okay, I can relate to that.
And we have these four big diesel generator, which are 16 cylinders V, and two small, which are 12 cylinders V. Of course, they are going to give power to the propulsion motor, but not only the propulsion motor, also to the hotel, all the lighting system on board, the chillers, the AC compressors, and all the auxiliary services on board.
Okay.
So, let's say we are the heart of the ship.
Without the generators, we're not going anywhere.
Anywhere.
Now, I noticed some of the ships in recent years have gone to the pod propulsion systems, but this one is back to the shaft-driven.
No, it's just a matter of decision of the company, you know, because we have six ships with this kind of propulsion, and all the rest are, let's say, traditional with this electric propulsion.
Okay.
So just a matter of decision of the company, how they want to act. But as far as I know, they just abandoned this idea. They are going on with this electric propulsion.
Okay. I had heard when they were building the Queen Mary 2 that there were some reliability issues with the pods. Was that a factor in the decision, do you know?
No, it's nothing to do with the other company or with any particular problem they faced lately. Just because probably a matter of costs. Maybe it's cheaper than building.
It always comes down to the money.
It's going out of my field, so I cannot tell you really. But technically talking, both are a very efficient system. So,
how long have you been with Carnival?
Carnival 13 years, almost 13.
I am just amazed. It seems like everybody I talk to has been with Carnival for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I was just mentioning before we started the recording that Captain Coutinho was our captain on board the Celebration in 1993. And looking through the book in our stateroom, he's been on almost every vessel, I think. And have you served on others as well?
Yeah, I did many vessels before this. I was on many fantasy class vessels and also many of this class of vessels. So,
which ones do you like the best?
But for me, ships are all the same, you know, because I like my job. So wherever I go, I do what I have to do and I enjoy it. So
tell me what the chief engineer does, just so I have no idea.
Well, basically, myself and chief engineer, we have a same mentions more or less, but chief engineer has the top responsibility of the engine, you know. So let's say the last decision is always up to him, to a chief engineer, same as the captain on the bridge. I mean, he's the top of the engine department. So, but technically we are the same. I mean, on the same level, not same responsibilities, but same level of knowledge and
different pay.
Of course, more responsibilities, more money. Huh?
So your responsibility is to the staff, to the engines, to the maintenance.
And the maintenance, I coordinate all the maintenance in the engine, and are responsible all the people working in the engine room. Electrician, refrigeration, and fitter, all the people working in day-by-day maintenance. You know,
when do you typically do the maintenance? Is it during port day when we're in Miami? Or
Always. We always prefer to do it when we are in port because, you know, something happens, we always, you know, because the ship is steady, it's not moving, it's not rocking. So,
safer?
It's safer, yeah, for sure. But in general, we do maintenance always, every day, no matter if the ship is at sea or is in port. It depends. There are some jobs we can do in port only, some jobs we can do in port and in navigation. So,
is your staff in charge of fixing the ice cream deck up on, or the ice cream machine up on deck 10?
As department, yeah, no personally. But there is a refrigeration staff, yeah, is in charge to fix the ice cream machine also. Yeah. So wherever you see something technical, starting from the very simple bulb on the ship and the ice cream machine and the music on the stage, you know, everything is technically related to engine, you know. So it's a huge responsibility.
Now, you mentioned the rocking of the ship and the stabilization. Yeah. The stabilizers are probably one of the neatest inventions for the passengers, especially on the larger vessels like this. I remember we were on the Celebration in 1993, and you know, for a week, I think I was still rocking after I got off board. But it's greatly reduced. I think I was first introduced to them on a Destiny class about 10 years ago. Can you tell me about the stabilizers? When did they come into play, and how big are they, and where are they?
Well, basically, the decision to extend the stabilizers is always coming from the captain, the bridge in general. According to the sea condition, they decide if we need to extend or not stabilize. Stabilizers are two huge arms, let's say about 7.5 meter long and 3 meter large. And they are located more or less in the midship.
Okay.
And they are controlled, once they're out, they are controlled by a PLC and two, let's say, roll motion sensors, which are going to calculate an output according to the movement of the ship, just to decide how much the stabilizer has to move in order to stabilize the ship.
Are they actually moving, or are they pretty static they're deployed? They are moving.
They're moving, yeah. According to the sea condition, I mean, there is a calculation, this PLC, which is going to tell the stabilizer how much they have to move in order to get an opposition to the sea movement. You know, I keep the ship steady as much as possible, of course.
Yes. I thought it was more or less a static system. You know, once they're out, they're out.
Absolutely not. They're moving.
I'm Dr. Robert Ballard, and I'm an explorer in residence for the National Geographic Society, and deeply enjoy this program.
A cruise ship is really a big floating hotel. As a result, many of the same concepts and technologies must be used for booking reservations, keeping track of billing, and tracking all sorts of records. Keeping those systems running behind all those operations is the job led by the onboard IS manager. In our case, that's Alex.
Which ship were you on last? Or were you just promoted from the Valor to the Valor?
No, I just signed on to the Valor to take over the ship. I was the senior on the Pride before this.
So you're familiar, the Pride is a sister? No.
No, Pride is
a... Glory and the Conquest are sister ships.
Pride is a Spirit class ship.
Okay. Is there much difference between that one and this one?
In terms of the difference, there's not that much. Most of the Carnival fleets, they're having almost the same kind of system, same amount of servers and so on. The only amount of hosts that is different. The bigger the ship, the more hosts and the more users, they will be using the system at the same time.
Tell me a little bit about the infrastructure you've got here. I mean, there's the on-screen programming. You can plan shore excursions from your stateroom. There's the sail and sign card. There's just a lot of systems. What is at the heart of each ship that's driving that?
There are several different hearts, like majority of the hotel operations. Mm-hmm. The heart would be in the Unix server that is running the Oracle database.
Okay.
That is pretty much the heart of the system, where the guest booking information to the folios, to the amount that they spend, and so on. As in regards to the onboard AITV system, that is the interactive system, it is actually supplied by one of a third-party vendor that they pretty much grabs the data from the updates from the database. For example, whenever we start a new voyage, we will load the AITV information, the first information to the server's database. Mm-hmm. Because the AITV server runs on a separate VLAN. So we pretty much upload the guest information, the Shorex information, and the folio information as they are being updated on the information desk and the other departments. Those updates are also being pushed to the system. In the case where they need to view the folio, how much have they spent so far, they will be able to view the amount that they spend in just a couple of clicks. But majority of the infrastructures on the ship are pretty much Cisco based, where we have about 6 to 8
hub closet. It depends on the size of the ship. If the smaller they are, the less hub closets we have. Mm-hmm. And they are all connected via fiber to the data center where the route.
I noticed that. I think I'm one of your few passengers who's been walking up looking at your cable trays. They're very nice. My compliments to whoever wired this thing. But there's a lot of fiber running around. There's got to be hundreds, if not thousands, of miles of cable on this ship.
You can say so.
That's a lot of things to keep track of. When you're in port, when we get to Miami tomorrow, is that when synchronization is done with the corporate servers, or...?
The synchronization runs as we speak.
Really? And that's done... How are we communicating with the home office?
We communicate through the satellite, and then we have our own servers that pretty much uploads and downloads. For example, we have the emails that is coming in, the public folders, and all the other informations. They are being pushed to the ship, as we say. And on Carnival's 20-hour vessels, they are being pushed constantly from the headquarters.
Okay, so... I would presume you've got a VPN connection back, but you're using the same wireless that the public is using to access the rest of the internet.
Well, the wireless is a bit different. It's, most of the systems on the ship, they run on a separate VLAN. The guests will have a separate VLAN that is not able to see the corporate site, and the corporate site would be the same, vice versa.
Okay. So... how much does it cost to use the wireless on board the ship?
It depends on the amount of minutes that you buy, because the wireless, for the guest wireless on the ship, it pretty much handles by MTN or the C-Mobile. They have their own, they pretty much lease the bandwidth from Carnival, and they make a business by selling out minutes to the guests.
Okay.
In terms of like serve by the minutes, if you buy a 60-minute block, and so on and so on. The more you buy, the better of a deal you get from them.
All right. Very good. Are there any systems that are outside of your area of control? I mean, are you involved at all with any of the computers in the engine room or the bridge or the Ivanhoe Theater? Where does where are the limits of your systems?
In terms of the bridge and engines, we don't really deal much with the system, but we are always the person that helps to troubleshoot. Most of them are actually being supported by technical operation in Miami. So in case one of the systems don't work, we will first have to help them to troubleshoot whether it's a connectivity issue or a database issue or any other issues, so we can relay the information to Miami headquarters, where there will be hundreds of different support staff that will be remoting into the server or the system to fix or to attempt to fix the system. Majority of the technical operation system, we are not responsible for it.
Have you been through any major upgrades yet? Going from, say, Windows 2000 to 2003 or now 2007 is coming out. Have you been involved with one of those upgrades?
No, I haven't been through the upgrades, but at the moment, Carnival is planning to virtualize all the servers to greatly reduce the amount of energy use as well as the noise in the data center.
Are they using VMware for that?
Yes, they are using VMware for it.
And what is your role in that?
Well, in the terms, usually when they plan to do a mass upgrade of the whole infrastructure, there will be support team from the headquarters that will board the ship. And we will assist them on whatever extra things that they need, like providing them information on so and so. And they will be the one that does the majority of the upgrades. We are just like an assistant to them.
Okay. So you can think that they would bring on some new physical hardware that would already have the VMs in it, or is it your job to take an image that they've got and virtualize based on the hardware you've got? I'm trying to think my guess is that all has to happen on a Sunday afternoon between the time, you know, we leave and the next group comes on.
Oh, if you're talking about virtualizing a server, they don't happen till we do a dry dock.
Oh, okay, which is every 4 years.
Yeah, pretty much about the same. The normal maintenance window, like pushing off patches and updates and so on, was done pretty much automatically now, with SCCM being pushed to all the other hosts on the ship. If we have any critical patches and so, it will be pushed automatically to the machines, and there will be a timer that counts down before the update runs. Usually the maintenance window will either happen in after midnight when the amount of traffic is low, or during port days when most of the guests are off the ship.
This is Adam Savage from Mythbusters, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Every company these days is looking for ways to promote itself as ecologically friendly, and Carnival is no exception. Domenico tells us how Valor does its part to keep the planet green.
Let's say the Carnival in general is committed to help the environment a lot. And lately we have been involved in many projects and commitment in order to improve the environmental standard. On board, first of all, we have two big incinerators which allow us to burn most of the garbage we produce on board.
Okay.
And plus we have all the recycling program which is practically we on board are recycling a lot of material like plastic, batteries and glass, aluminum, toner cartridge,
light fixtures, flashing lights.
Yeah, right. Also the electric bulbs and neon lights, which are going to disembark when we are in port. So practically, we are not going to waste anything.
There's no dumping at sea.
The food waste we are dumping at sea.
Food waste, okay.
Yeah.
That's not
food waste. Of course, when we are outbound 12 nautical miles.
Okay. And that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
Because it's biodegradable.
Biodegradable. Okay. Yeah.
And the fish love
it. That's right. Yeah.
So they tell us.
The Caribbean fish are very fat.
is the heat from the incinerators used for anything?
No.
Okay, so not used to heat the hot water in our showers?
No.
How do you get that hot water hot so fast? I turn it on and the water's
well,
hot.
Well, we have two systems to get hot water. One, which is the traditional one, we use the steam, which is produced on board with two huge boilers. And the steam is going through the huge heaters, mm-hmm. and this heater is going to warm up the water, which is going to go everywhere on the ship, in cabins, galleys, and everything. And the second system, we are using the hot water, the cooling water coming from the engine, which is going into these heaters, and is going to heat up the water for the accommodation and galleys.
Big system?
Yeah, big system.
Everything's big on this ship.
Huge ship.
Everything's
huge,
big.
Huge system. Yeah.
The staff is big. It's 110,000 gross tons. The size of the ship, 952 feet long. It's just
big ship. Yeah.
It's big. I mean, it takes 10 minutes to walk from one end to the
other.
And
it's not the biggest.
No. Now, what is the biggest now in the Carnival fleet?
Carnival fleet is the Splendor at the moment, the biggest one.
Okay, and there's another one coming out in 2009, the Dream?
The Carnival Dream.
And the Magic is coming out shortly after that.
They're going to be the biggest one.
And how big are those? Are they greater than 1,000?
Around 1,020.
Wow.
1,020.
More decks?
Yeah, there are two more decks, more than this. Yeah.
Oh,
I look at these
decks,
from the sea, and they look like they're going to tip over. Somebody somewhere has to be doing the hull design right.
Yeah.
They obviously don't. Even in the stronger seas, they remain stable.
This is Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica, and you're listening to Technorama.
These huge ships need a huge amount of fuel to run. There are also questions about the lifeboats that my friend Steve and I had. The crew is very good at explaining the principles to us less informed people.
Did you have any questions, Steve?
Actually, how much fuel do you burn usually per hour?
We burn around 600 tons per cruise.
Okay.
So per hour it depends. I cannot tell you very well because it depends of the load of the engines, okay. How many engines we are running.
Okay.
But we burn around 600 tons per week per cruise. Yeah.
A little bit more than my boat.
You've got what, a 19 footer?
Yeah.
So you can put about 20 of them together.
Put three of those boats in one of the lifeboats.
So practically every time we are in Miami, in the port of call, we have to bunker the fuel oil.
Now, are you also in charge of the safety equipment, like the lifeboat tests and...
The engine side, yes.
Okay.
All the rest is on the deck side and safety officer side.
So you have to make sure that the engines on each lifeboat,
yes,
are in good working order.
We perform maintenance on the engines, lifeboat engines, and routine checks and weekly checks.
How often do you need to do that?
Depends. There are checks we do on weekly basis, checks we do on a monthly basis. It depends. We have a schedule for everything. So we do always in cooperation with deck department, safety officer.
Okay.
So
also on the lifeboats, the zinc plates, are those for the preventing things from attaching itself to the lifeboat hull? There's little zinc plates. I think there's zinc on it.
That's what I thought too. We were looking at the lifeboats and there were some plates attached there, and I remember them on our steel hull boat.
What kind of plates? Sorry.
The rectangular plates bolted. There's one at the bow and one at the stern of each lifeboat. And from a steel hull, I thought it was an electrolysis prevention thing, but it's fiberglass hull on the lifeboat, so I didn't know what it was for.
But you mean on the boat itself?
On the boat itself.
Underneath.
On the lifeboat.
Yeah.
Underneath the lifeboat?
Yes.
Yeah, forward and aft. No, those one is just part of the structures of the lifeboats.
Okay.
Yes. It's not the cathode system.
Okay.
No.
Because lifeboat is plastic material.
That's what I thought. I'm looking at fiberglass, electrolysis, doesn't add up. And he thought maybe it was to keep barnacles or something away.
No, it's just part of the structure of the lifeboat, which that one actually is quite the strongest part of the lifeboat, because at the top of those of that plate that you saw,
mm-hmm,
we have the hook where the lifeboat will be suspended with all the under 50 person on board. So you can imagine that
the strain on the keel.
Yeah. Strong. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so it doesn't break or damage anything. Okay.
Yeah, that would be good. You don't want it cracking on everybody on board, crack. I wonder who discovered that. How many lifeboats?
26.
26.
26, yes.
And that's enough for all the passengers, all the crew, and then some.
Well, actually, it's not really enough because we must use life rafts as well.
Okay, so there are the lifeboats that hold 100?
Under 50, 24 lifeboats hold under 50 person,
okay, and
crew
then
and guest, and then we have other two with less capacity, 60 persons only.
And then we've got life rafts.
Yeah, life rafts that they can hold up to 35 person. So basically, we can say that, say, high season, if we are fully, mm-hmm, fully booked on board, we will accommodate all the guests in the lifeboats, and some of the guests, they will go in the first 8 life rafts, if we are fully. Because we have 26 lifeboats and 70 life rafts.
Plenty of room.
Yes, but the 70 life rafts, they know, only 34 we are going to use to satisfy the maximum capacity. The rest, the 36, are a spare.
You're listening to Chuck Tomasi, and this is Johnny B with MostlyTrivial.com. Ain't he funny?
Hey, I wasn't on the script.
Ain't he funny?
Not everything goes smoothly on board a cruise ship, and sometimes plans can be changed. Thankfully, the crew is always prepared and has a contingency plan. On Tuesday, when we got to Grand Cayman, we found out that we were not stopping at Georgetown, but another location on the island because of weather conditions. I assumed that we had known about this a day or perhaps several hours in advance, but Salvatore tells me that sometimes they don't even have that much warning.
Well, actually, that one was decided the last very minute because of the port authority closed the port in Georgetown. We were supposed to drop the anchor, and they closed it, and they moved us to Spot Bay, which is south of Cayman, which is was a lee side because we had a northerly wind, and when there is northerly wind, you cannot really conduct safe tender operation. So basically was yes.
The smaller tender boats take you into the shore and back to the ship, and if it's too rough, it's going to be dangerous getting on and off of those smaller boats. I mean, the Valor isn't going to move much. It's a big ship. Were we actually anchored in Grand Cayman? So the GPS and the thrusters were holding us in position.
Well, the ship is not provided with the dynamic position, so just we were on the engine, without the use of GPS, actually, by means of landmarks and distance.
Okay.
We were keeping the ship in that spot.
Now, tell me about the, I think I got this right, the Global Maritime Distress...
Safety System.
Safety system, yes, thank you.
Yeah, GMDSS. So this one has replaced the old radio room with the radio officer. Before, in the past, there was a radio officer, mm-hmm. but he was in charge of the radio room. He was in charge of a communication in and out of the ship. Well, time had changed, you know, and now all every officer is responsible of the watch. Every watch leader officer is capable, has got the certificate to handle communication. And we have this station, this, you know, all the equipment that were once in the past in the radio room, they are all now on the bridge. And basically we have Inmarsat, B and C, for example, on this ship. And we have Iridium phone. And we have Telex, and we can... We no longer have the radio room, so something that was in the past.
How long has that been in service?
I believe in the 2000, more or less.
Okay, so yeah, since the 10 years,
2001, 2002, there was no any longer another figure of the radio officer, and there was no more radio room.
If there is a distress call from another ship nearby, how many people can we take on another vessel from the ship that's in distress? How many people can we take on this ship?
Of course we depending of how close we are, of course we will give our help. We assist the ship, no matter if we have to load more passenger than than our capacity, because then it will be a sequence of events. In other ships will come over and they will assist. So what we need to do is give assistance first, and then other ship will come.
Figure out where to go, put people.
Yes, other ship will come by, and yes.
And we're never really that far from land, really. I mean, there's always
exactly. No, with the ship we are never more than 50 nautical miles from any land, so
okay.
Anything that happened, knock on wood, but we are always close to the shore, so we wouldn't have to.
Although, people look out and you think we're right in the middle of nowhere, we are relatively close.
So. Yes, we are, yeah.
A little more comforting that way.
This is Steve Wozniak. You're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Safety is a top concern on board a cruise ship, and while most clients are having a good time, the crew is ever mindful of the ship's situation. One instrument is analogous to the black box devices on board commercial airlines. Salvatore explains what the device is, how it works, and even some of the restrictions around it.
Now, there is one other system, and I think it crosses all three of your boundaries. I forget the name, but it's equivalent to the black box on the airlines that records activities in speed. I mean, there's got to be computer systems involved for recording all of that, as well as the engine controls and the bridge.
Yes, it's called VDR.
VDR?
Yeah, VDR. Yeah.
Okay.
And video data recording. And basically it's... take all the information. Actually, you can see from the file, you can see the view of the radar, mm-hmm. of the electronic chart, of the ship's route, and all the characteristic of the data, speed, and also the other vessel nearby, and the all the shell door are interfaced, so you know in case the shell door was open or closed, and also anything that happened, the sound, any communication.
So the audio?
Yes, the audio communication on the bridge. You can hear the communication between the officer and the outside. And basically it's a black box.
And my understanding is it's not used just for investigations should something come up, but also it could be used for training as well, simulations for training in similar situations.
Well, you can use it for many things, but you know for sure, you know, in case it might be used to find out what happened, mm-hmm. in case there was an issue, and also in case of an accident. And we have the download where all the data are downloaded is on the bridge, but we have also a remote station of the last 48 hours. That is outside on the open deck, and in case it needs to, you know,
easier to retrieve.
Yes, in case, you know.
Sure. We don't talk about that.
No, yeah.
You know. Good to have, but don't want to use it.
Now, Alex, is the data from that stored on your systems, or is it in a closed system, proprietary?
It's stored on a closed system.
Okay.
The captain is the only one that had the key to the room where the VDR main server is. Most of the time, the IS is only assisting in terms of downloading the data and copying it to a CD or DVD to send it to Miami in case any sort of investigation needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That is on the other ship. I'm not really sure on the Valor how it works, but on the Fantasy class ship and on the Spirit class ship, only the captain have the key to it. So whenever we need to go into that room, we need to first get the permission from the captain, and he will give us the key to go in.
Do you report directly to the captain, Alex?
No, on a Carnival ship, we report directly to the hotel director on the ship.
Okay, so, and the hotel director is?
He's like the general manager on the hotel.
Okay, is that David? No.
Yes, that will be David.
David, okay. And David, in turn, reports to the cruise director?
No.
I'm all messed up.
The whole organization chart on board the ship works from the captain,
mm-hmm.
then to the chief engineer, and the hotel director, and then it comes down to the staff captain, staff chief engineer, and to the below ranks, and so on and so on. So
okay.
My department is pretty much unique. I do report to the hotel director on board the ship, and in turns, I also report to my boss in Miami. But majority of the any incidents on board the ship, we will first advise the hotel director. So in case of any system that goes down,
mm-hmm.
if it affects the revenue, we need to advise the hotel department.
And Domenico, your boss is the chief engineer?
Yeah.
Okay. How is he?
It's fine. I cannot tell the opposite. No, it's joking.
Yeah, just between you and me.
No, he's really a nice person, but I never met a bad one, I have to say, you know, because we are all here for a purpose, you know, just to work all together to give our guests a good cruise, you know, and
And they're
a good product.
The engineering is something that not a lot of people appreciate when they're on board. They see the food, they see the staterooms, the swimming pools. You guys don't get enough credit.
Many people don't know really what is going on down there, you know.
That's right.
It is truly amazing.
Yeah.
And Salvatore, you report to?
I report to the staff captain.
Staff captain, who in turn is reports to
the second in command.
Okay.
I mean, he's right inside of the captain. So.
Now, the captain isn't always on the bridge 24 hours a day. That would be impossible. you work in shifts. How does that work?
Well, on the bridge, there is, as I was saying before, is always manned. There are three watch that today. They have a 4 hours watch.
Okay.
And then 8 hours off. And they keep changing all the time. Like two officers and one quartermasters. So the bridge is always manned. And during arrival and departure, of course, captain is on the bridge, staff captain is on the bridge, myself, and the pilot.
So you have to be up bright and early tomorrow when we pull into Miami.
Exactly. I am. And then, I'm in charge for the mooring station. And there is another officer who's in charge for the other mooring station. And on the bridge, basically, there will be the captain and staff captain and one officer on duty.
All right. And
Dominique, the engine the same. There is the...
Always,
24 hours, is an engineer on duty.
Okay.
And two engineers on duty, one oiler. But during maneuvering, there is chief engineer, myself, and sometime the first engineer, depends. But in general, it's 24-hour on duty.
Have you had any good stories? You know, you're pulling into Belize doing that snake trail and a thruster doesn't fire or something?
Thanks God, no. No, when you work in the engine, you always face problems, technical faults and everything. But I have to say that we have a very good systems and we always keep up.
Good.
So it's good.
Yep. Alex, I work in IT. I know. I feel your pain. We can share stories sometime.
Definitely.
I'm sure we have a lot in common. Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, I thank you very much. It's been an honor, and I really appreciate all the work you do for Carnival, for making this an enjoyable cruise. As a repeat customer, I will be back again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig. These guys have nothing on James T. Kirk, and I should know.
All right, we have caught up with cruise director Chris Jefferson. Chris, how long have you been with Carnival?
Oh, going on 10 years now.
10?
Yeah, started as a dancer 10 years ago.
That's rather funny you mentioned that, because your performance this evening was rather unusual. Tell the listener what you were just doing moments ago.
It involved ladies' clothes and a Dolly Parton wig.
And we'll leave it with that imagination.
There you go.
Say, did you have a chance to work with John Heald?
John is a friend of mine, and we've never worked together directly. We've had lots of time at conferences and phone calls and chats, and he's a good guy.
He was cruise director on the
every ship
Celebration when I was on in 93 and the Destiny in 98.
And every other ship since, I think.
I think he's had,
As soon as they come out of berth, he's on there.
It's John Heald. He's the man.
But he's no longer cruise director.
Yeah, he's coming here in a few weeks.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, I thought
he was like public relations.
John Heald is now John Heald BM. No. John Heald BA. Brand ambassador. That is John Heald. He is senior cruise director and brand ambassador. So he has his blog, and he spends a lot of time as an ambassador for the company, but corporately as well, not just Carnival. And he'll be cruise director on this ship in 3 weeks.
Well, where do you go?
I'll be off to the Conquest.
So,
John wanted this ship, so they bumped me, of course.
Well, congratulations. I would consider that a promotion.
It's a great ship, but this is a good one, too. This is a very good ship.
So how do you get to be a cruise director?
Hard work. I was fortunate enough to work with the best as I was moving up through the ranks. I was worked with the likes of Brett Allens, Corey Schmidt. I spent time with John Heald, not directly working with him, but observing him and seeing what he does. So I was fortunate enough to work with great cruise directors. I worked hard. I did a year as a dancer, a couple of years as a social host, a couple of years as an assistant cruise director, and now I'm cruise director. And it's the infallible line from all of the team members on board, and pretty much every crew member you'll speak to, they will say, I was going to do one contract, and so-and-so years, I'm still here.
I've got a similar story with the company I'm at. I started as a three-month employee. I've been there over 20 now.
That's it, and that's how it works. And you enjoy your job, clearly, as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Chris, now, obviously from the accent, you're from England. Whereabouts?
I am from a little village southwest of London, about 30 miles from the centre, far enough in the countryside to feel like I'm in the countryside, close enough to London to be a part of the fun that happens in London, and if I need to go up and see shows, then I'm close enough to do it. So when you come off the ship, it's nice to kind of relax and tuck myself away in a little village and enjoy the anonymity for a while. It's very nice. And not wear women's clothes, of course, which is good.
Now, you've got family sailing with you this week.
I do. I have my mother-in-law and my aunts and uncles. And, of course, my wife is a dancer in the shows. So my mother-in-law predominantly has come to see her, but me as a byproduct. And they've had a lovely time. We got off in every single port. We did some dolphin tours. We did some jeep tours. We played golf and we swam with the stingrays. So we did lots and lots. And I'm exhausted. As we say in England, I'm pooped.
I was trying to think of what the phrase was. I'm pretty good with my English to English translation.
It's pooped. I'm pooped.
Chris, we have one question about the emergency facilities. And maybe this is better for the ship's doctor, but we thought maybe you would know. Steve, fire away.
This is going to sound really odd, but if someone were to pass away while on board, where do they go with them?
They go right next to all the other meat that's down in the freezers. I'm joking. Hopefully it will never happen. Fortunately, it's never happened while I've been on a ship. They would be disembarked, of course, to the local authorities and be expedited back to their country of origin, where the family could then take care of them. Carnival are very good at looking after them and the rest of the family who are on board. So we do have procedures in place to look after everybody. All right.
So there's no onboard morgue or facilities like that?
No. We do what we can to make it as painless for the family and discreet, and do what we can in the ports of call. Yeah.
All right. Curiosity.
I know.
Another question for you. How are the ports of call determined? We stopped at Grand Cayman on Tuesday, and to be blunt, very lush, rich, banking society. Then we went to Roatan in Honduras, and again, opposite end of the spectrum, very poverty. Now, somebody somewhere is making a decision that's going to be a good location. How is that decision made, you know?
It's through the strategic planning department in the office. Now, of course, lots comes into play. We're very fortunate to have lots of ports of call on the eastern Caribbean side. When you go to the west, you've got lots of Mexican ports, and of course we're trying to expand into all other areas and all different countries. Roatan is, I can only describe it, I don't know if you came to my port informational talk, I rave about the place. I think it's just stunning. It's beautiful.
Best snorkeling bar none.
Exactly. Well, I'm a diver as well, and it's the best place I've dived. So we're looking for new ports all the time. It gives variety to guests. I can only equate Roatan now as what Cozumel was 25 years ago. You know, it's an up-and-coming place. There's lots of investment going in there. And listeners out there, if there is a ship that goes to Roatan, go on it. It's fantastic. It's great. It's wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful place. That's all
I was
say.
There 30 years ago, and like you said, it hasn't changed. It's
right.
The same place today, but I'm really curious to see what it'll look like 5-10 years down the road. It'll be much, much different.
It will be, and there will be some great things, and there will be some things which maybe aren't quite so great. I like, and by that what I mean, I like the local charm.
Yes.
And I don't want that to go. I don't want it to become a generic port. I want that local charm. I want the people to stay lovely. I want them to enjoy the fact that every week they get one or two ships as opposed to one or two ships a day. And I think that makes the guests who are getting off the ship and also as crew members, it makes us feel more special to them. So,
more genuine.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Lovely place. Lovely.
They are wonderful people.
Good. Can't good. Glad you enjoyed it.
Thank
good.
You.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a wonderful week.
Thank you.
I appreciate everything you've done.
You're absolutely welcome. Thank you very much. And have a good listen, listeners.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Technorama. I would like to thank my hosts Salvatore Mongraviti, Domenico Otrello, and Alex Tan for their great information about the ship and what it takes to run one of these marvels of engineering. I also want to thank our cruise director, Chris Jefferson, for the last-minute impromptu interview, and thanks to Jenny, our spectacular onboard customer relations manager, who set up the interview. Special thanks to our travel agent, Frank Kropkowski, for putting the trip together. We had a wonderful time, and I highly recommend taking a Caribbean cruise. If you're interested, find Frank at Easy Dream Vacations on the web. If you like Technorama, tell a friend. That's the best way to get the word out and to help us. If you're also inclined, drop us a note. You can send an email to us at technorama@chuckchat.com or call the listener line at 206-222-2428. We'd love to hear from you. Have you been on a similar cruise? How was yours different? Did you look at all the network cabling? Okay, that might be a bit overboard. Oh, did I just say that? Then again, this is Technorama, and I might expect that from you. If you want to find us on the web, look under chuckchat.com, friendsintech.com, or farpointmedia.net. You're likely to find something you like to listen to at one of those sites. Since our schedule is so erratic, I recommend downloading Apple iTunes and subscribing to this show for free. Details are on the front page at chuckchat.com. Why spend your time looking around for new audio content? Make the computer do it for you. That's what they're good at. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, a special sign-off from our cruise director. So would you give me a binary high five?
101.
Thank you.